afternoon, everybody. This is Robin Ayoub from the Localization Fireside Chat, and welcome to another episode. Today, I'm recording episode 158, if I get the counts correctly. And if I made a mistake in the counts, I'm sure somebody will correct me. Today, I have the distinct pleasure and honor to be joined by Susan Friedman. Susan is an author, influencer, empowering nonfiction authors. That's, I'm reading your bio on LinkedIn, to greatness. Be seen, be heard, and be valued. That's her tagline. And I would love to explore the various topics with you today, Susan. But before we get started, one of the things I was doing the research on, and I having started to write a book myself at some point, and I shelved it. So I'm talking about an experience from an experience here. They take years to write, real money to produce. Then they quietly sit on some shelf on Amazon or virtual shelves, and you know, maybe a couple of reviews or a handful of reviews, no downstream impact, no revenue lift, and no partnerships to leverage or leveraging any of any sorts. I don't think the problem is in the writing quality. I'm thinking it's a strategy. I can't wait to explore all this with you today. First, I want to welcome you to the channel, Susan.
Thank you.
Great honor to have you with me.
Thank you. I really appreciate it, Robin, being here with you. A lot of fun. I'm sure we could talk about a lot of different things. And you touched, you know, the nail on the head with what goes on with so many authors. So I'm excited to delve into that with you.
Absolutely. And Susan, as we say on this channel, everybody's got a story. Why don't we start with this? What is your story? What got you here?
What got me here? So the accent is British. For those people are like, where's she from? Such a mishmash of accents. I've lived in England. I've lived in France. I've lived in South Africa. And now in the US. So I never wanted to be an entrepreneur. I'd never even thought about it, to be honest with you. And because I've been an entrepreneur now for 35 years. And it was only because I'd been laid off, not once, not twice, but three times. And I was like, you know what? I think somebody up there has got a different plan for me. So my background is PR and marketing. And I was like, I found that I was very invisible and replaceable in the marketplace. And so I decided I have to go out on my own. I wanted to be a master of my destiny and not a victim of my circumstance. So yes, I went out on my own and I was like, okay, what do I want to do? What do I really like to do? And I love working with teaching adults. And I say that very loosely because I started a training company and I was training exhibitors at trade shows. And I had been to many shows and seen that there were a lot of mistakes that exhibitors were making. So I was like, you know what? I think I can help them do a better job what they do on the trade show floor. And I did that for 25 years. And in fact, interestingly enough, you and I were talking briefly earlier, and I mentioned the National Speakers Association. And when I first joined that way back, as I say, about 30 plus years ago, I asked one of the stalwarts there, I said, give me some advice. What should I do? I'm brand new, you know, in the training business, in the speaking business. He said, write a book. I was like, write a book? I'd never even thought of that. So I was like, and he said, you don't have to get it published. You're the author of, you could self-publish it. I was like, okay, I'm going to get a publisher. So I found myself a publisher, got rejected several times. You know, we're skipping a little bit here. And that book ended up selling 500,000 copies to one company. And we can definitely, I know you want to talk about, or we want to talk about niche marketing, which we would get into. Finding a niche for yourself is really, really important. I worked in the trade show industry for about 25 years. Alongside of that, I actually started my own publishing company. And I published for nonfiction authors. I was referred to by book coaches. And after I'd, you know, sort of felt that I'd lost my passion for the trade show industry, I decided that I wanted to do this full time, publishing, and then working primarily with nonfiction authors with their book marketing, guiding them as to how they can be successful, use their books successfully, and that it's not sitting on the shelf. collecting dust. And it's also not competing with the 4 million other books that are out there in the marketplace.
You know, it's we talk about a topic that is books now, and it's a trend, it seems. Every professional reaches a certain point in their career where they feel, and I, at least that's how I felt. I just left a big corporate job 3 months ago, 4 months ago now. And you feel like you've accumulated a lot of knowledge, a lot of wisdom, a lot of know-how. Maybe I'm patting myself on the back too much here, but
no, but it's true.
It is. You've collected something, whatever you want to, whatever adjective you want to put on top of that. And then you would think, okay, what do I do with this? Is it worthwhile, you know, just let it die? You know, a few years down the road, I don't remember any of it. Or should I encapsulate it, put it into something, a book, a podcast like I do, and you do as well. You have your own podcast on the go, Susan. So passing on something to somebody that helps them somehow. I think this is where the philosophical idea of a book came into my mind when I started thinking about writing a book. Does that reflect of where you're coming with this?
Yes. And looking at, going back a little bit with this, Robin, is looking at, yes, you've got this expertise, and this is very common, that people want to sort of don't want to lose that and want to be able to pass it on. So there would be two types of books that you might consider here. One is the book with all your knowledge, expertise. The other is a legacy book. So depending on what you wanted to do, the book to do for you. Many people coming out of a corporate want to go onto the speaking circuit. There's good money to be made in that market. However, these days, there's a lot of competition, and having a book gives you that much of an edge, credibility in the marketplace. In fact, nowadays, the expectation is that you have a book if you want to be a speaker. So having that book gives you the credibility, the credentials to say, hey, I wrote the book on this subject. So,
right. That's right. Absolutely. Now, you've spent 30 years in publishing. You know, that's 30 years in the same industry. That's, you know, a lot of expertise, a lot of, you've seen a lot. I mean, you've been around the publishing industry for a while. From where you sit today, what is the biggest misunderstanding smart professionals still have about books? Like everything has a misunderstanding and a positive in it, but what is the misunderstanding that professionals are taking a look at books? A waste of time, waste of effort? What is it?
Yeah, a lot will depend, you know, what you want the book to do for you. I always ask questions when authors come to me, and they come to me with a finished manuscript, and then we publish it. And then my real passion is working with them on the marketing. So there are three types of ways of publishing, and that's what people don't always understand. You've got the traditional, which most people know, you know, the Simon & Schuster's, the Wiley's, the Random House, the big boys in the business. And there's a lot of prestige to be published by a traditional publisher, but then there are a lot of downsides. So understanding, you know, and plus it's getting so much harder than it ever was to get in with and being a celebrity helps. So they're looking at really, how are they going to be able to move books? Because that's a big part of it too. You've got the hybrid, you know, I fall into that, and where you have much more control of the book. And then there's the self-publishing where it's do it yourself. Now, it's a jungle, and understanding how to work that jungle and is really, I love to guide authors in that process because, as you say, it's tough. There's a lot of misunderstanding. People don't know how it works, what's the right thing for them to do. So I often have this kind of conversation so that you understand that the different types of publishing and, you know, obviously the pros and cons with each.
Now, when you say, and kudos to you, your book hit, you know, large number of sales, I'm assuming it's like winning the lottery. Is it like a repeatable process, or is it just hope and pray?
We're trying to take the hope and pray out of it, definitely.
Okay.
So funnily enough, again, I never thought of selling that kind of quantity. I was working with, because I was in a niche market, my audience were exhibitors at trade shows. And so what I was looking to do, because my book was not a book that you would go into a bookstore and buy. Amazon did not exist at the time, so I'm showing my age a little bit there. So, and it would not have been a bestseller either, because I sold 500,000 to one company. And I thought about it once the book was out there, because I was like, I don't want to sell this book in onesies and twosies. I want to sell this book in bulk. And so I started thinking about the kind of people who would be interested in my book. And I looked, and you talked about, you know, downstream marketing. This was more this sort of, who else out there has my target audience, and we could complement each other rather than compete with each other. And so I hooked up with display companies, the booth builders, and sold 2,000 to a custom exhibit. And then I thought, well, let me go and see about the portable exhibits. And that's when I came across a company who was very interested in the book and wanted to use it for their distributors, to use it as what we know now as a lead magnet. So it was translated into 5 languages. I wasn't looking for this, but it dropped in my lap. But there is a process, and it's looking, you know, when you're looking at a niche market, it's looking at who could you partner with that have the same, you know, as I say, the same audience in mind, and you can complement each other.
And that's
how you were able to sell version. I don't know if I went off track with the question.
No. You hit the nail on the head. That's great. Now, that tells me, based on the experience that you went through, Susan, that, and that's part of your thinking, I'm assuming, that books are not books anymore. They're more of a business infrastructure.
They're a tool.
Yeah, they're business tools to do things with.
Absolutely.
You know, I'm just going to throw an example out there. I mean, you've got a million sales books out there, right? Everybody is a sales guru for some reason. And, you know, we go out and they write a sales book of some sort. How do you draw the line and say what rises to the top versus that sits in the middle? And nobody needs to, not everybody needs to compete to get to the top, perhaps. Maybe the middle is okay. I don't know. Like, how do you get that chemistry, if you will?
So you pick the right subject, because sales, marketing, leadership, there are a zillion books out there on that subject. And you try and compete with those, forget it. You know, you're always going to, somebody's always going to rise to the top. And it's going to take a lot of work for you to be able to rise to the top. And this is where looking at a vertical, looking at that niche, and going down one avenue. For instance, I had an author who wrote a sales book for small printers. And then I've got somebody else who wrote a book similar for the HVAC environment. Now, when a small printer looks to find a book on sales, is he going to take a general book on sales, or is he going to take look for a book that says for small printers? You see, so you've written that book for me, and all of a sudden the competition has reduced significantly. So that is where the niche, where the vertical comes into play when you're writing your book specifically for a certain target audience.
Now, the niche, that's a very interesting idea, because I see the business benefit for that. I mean, mm-hmm. You're absolutely correct. Like, general books are a dime a dozen, but specific niche books. And that's, I think there is a, from an author perspective, there's that always that hope or desire or fantasy, if you want to call it, in some cases. They want to create a book that's going to be taught in universities, and it's going to be a textbook on every doorstep kind of thing. Reality and realities are like completely different. And it's just like, it doesn't add up in a lot of cases. Because again, I'm reminded by how many sales books are out there, mm-hmm. Millions of them. And if I want to take all of them and digest and put them all in one AI library and tell AI to give me a snapshot of all these books, they're all similar. Mm-hmm. They all say the same thing.
Yep.
But you're right. When you design something from the ground up specifically for something, regardless of how small that niche is, because I'm assuming printers and, you know, HVAC, it's not like we're selling to the pharmaceutical industry or the automotive sector.
Yeah.
It's much larger industries. So I'm assuming when you capitalize on your knowledge very well. So basically what you're saying is go deep, not go horizontal in this case.
Very much so. And when you look at going narrow and deep, your marketing is going to be so much more effective and efficient, because you're channeling yourself just at that audience. Now, what comes up, Robin, often is, well, the fear factor. What if somebody outside that niche wants to buy your book? I'm not saying don't sell it to them. I'm saying where you're putting your energy is in this vertical rather than trying to appeal to everyone, where you're just, it's almost like throwing spaghetti against the wall and hoping some of it's going to stick. You know, it's really tough. And you don't want to get into that. And yet so many authors are following others who are doing exactly that. And it's soul destroying. I mean, I hear a lot of sob stories, let me tell you.
You know, it's sort of like, you know, the old saying, instead of boiling the ocean, just focus on a small problem and try to fix that.
Absolutely. I believe in ponds and throwing a pebble in the pond and letting the ripples, roll out. Because that's it. I mean, it's so much easier to fish in one spot than try and look for fish in lots of different spots.
Now, one of your interesting ideas that you shared today is bulk book selling. Right? That's the first time I hear about it. Obviously, it exists, but nobody talks about it. Thank you for bringing it up on this channel. Why has this not been so prevalent, or nobody taught it somehow?
Because they're working with the masses. You know, they're putting the book out to the masses rather than concentrating on specific, you know, targets and looking at those, because that's where the book, you can use it for training. You mentioned universities, training programs. I've got one of my authors who wrote a book on health literacy. She was an RN, and she wrote this book specifically for other RNs. Her book is accepted, you know, in a nurse trainings, and she's speaking to that particular group, and the book is selling all over the world because they know it's specifically for this target audience.
So from an author perspective, I'm assuming you've seen all kind, but what kind of messaging mistakes when an author is trying to pitch a book or an idea to an organization?
People don't buy books, Robin. People buy what the book does for you. What's the value that your book is contributing to the world?
This is such a fundamental selling process.
I know. I mean, this is not
sales 101.
Science. This is not rocket science. Believe me, if it was, I would. I'm not a scientist.
Good for you.
I think people try and make it too hard for themselves. It's actually a lot easier. So, and when you get out of, you know, trying to do what everybody else is doing and do your thing, you've got much more opportunity for success. Now, let's say as a public speaker, Robin, you want to be a public speaker now. Let's say everybody in your audience needs to have a copy of your book. Now, this isn't back of the room sales. This is pre-sales. So your contract has your speaker fee plus 500 copies of the book, or 300 or 100 copies of the book, so that everybody in your audience walks away with a copy of your book. Then you're not wishing and hoping and praying that somebody will come at the back of the room and buy. You've brought a box of books and you sell two, and then you're like, now I've got to send these all back again.
I got to take them back home.
Yes. It's expensive.
You know, I really love this. I really love this idea. It's baked into all the other activities. And you mentioned it earlier. The idea keeps revolving around it, is the book becomes the business infrastructure, structure, part of that. It is not hope and pray, as I started earlier, where you said we're going to try to take that out of the equation.
Yeah.
Is to make sure that it doesn't go onto the shelf somewhere. Yes. And hopefully somebody passing by every year, they grab one.
And that's so soul destroying for authors. They've put so much time, energy, money into this that they forget, you know, that what the book is about. Why did they write this book? They wanted to make a difference. And the book allows you to do that. It's a tool, except nobody has taught authors how to use this tool successfully until I came along. And there are other people doing it as well. I'm not the only one, but really, really focusing on that idea that where you're putting your energy and the message of the book. You know, people go out there and, you know, to a networking event, oh, I wrote a book. Well, so what?
Yep.
You know, what's this book going to do for me? That's what I'm interested in. Why should I buy your book just because you wrote a book? Now, you know, your family and friends, they'll buy the book because you wrote it, because they're doing you a favor. But, you know, the business world or whoever you wrote this for has got to see the value. And is it going to help solve their problem, challenge, whatever their issue is, their pain? Is it going to soothe their pain? Does that make sense?
It does, absolutely. It does make sense because you are giving people who are thinking about writing books, me included, a moment of self-reflection on what kind of books that they need to put out there. Not because you're passionate about a certain topic. Feel free to write about it from a nostalgia point of view. That's fine. I love photography. It doesn't mean, and I love to write about photography. It doesn't mean I'm going to make, you know, bulk money out of photography books. There's billions of these things out there. I may be passionate about it, but that doesn't mean anything. What you're trying to tell the potential authors out there or the current authors is that be mindful or be purposeful of your book. What problem are you trying to address and how your book is going to be solving that problem or used in the future to solve that problem, if I can paraphrase you.
Yes, very much so. And know that writing a book is a lot easier than, you know, people are thinking, especially you've spoken on podcasts, you're doing this podcast, you know, you've got so much information that if it's in verbal form, it can be transcribed, and then work with an editor and pull together for a book. I mean, I always look for the easy button, Robin. I'm looking at why make it so hard? You know, and I've written 18 books, so I know what it's like to sit there.
The easy button, Susan, you're just speaking my language now.
We can talk about the easy button. Yes, I mean, I've written books. I know sitting down and looking at that blank screen and like, oh, where do I start?
You know, my personal experience, and just anecdotally for the audience, I started writing a book, what is it, a year and a half ago now? A year ago almost. And I didn't know where to start. I have a lot to say about, you know, selling in the language business, in the language industry. I spent the past 23 years in the language industry. And, you know, I've taken small companies, grew them into larger companies, sold them, et cetera, 2-3 times. So I wanted to pass on that experience specifically, as you mentioned earlier, in the language industry. You know, some other people want to buy it, go ahead, buy it. But my purpose is the language industry and the transformation that the language industry is. So here's what I did. I thought, where do I start with this? So I started, people keep asking me, like, how did you become who you are? And when I tell my story, people are fascinated where I come from and where I am now. But where I come from is very fascinating, I think, to me. From the reaction I get a lot of people fascinated by where I come from. So I said, well, I would start from the beginning, from zero. Oh my God, I spent like 30,000 words and I'm not done yet on the beginning of where I started. I said, no. I got to reshape this. This doesn't work that way.
Yeah. I mean, you know, an origin story, like you had me start with mine, which, you know, you give a taster. You're looking at how can you, you know, condense that in a format that gives people a little bit, or as you work through the book, you can give examples, your own examples, and then, of course, other examples of other people who you've worked with. But having a book specific to that audience is brilliant. I mean, how many other books are there on sales in that environment? Probably not very many. So you can be the go-to person, which is really what you want to look at. How can you have that thought leadership and be that go-to expert within a certain niche market? I hate to sound like a stuck record, but
that's... No, it is. It is absolutely, it's absolutely correct. And you mentioned it earlier, because sometimes people write in one language, but there are interests in other languages. And you mentioned your book has been translated. So what do you think of the, you know, most authors, at least we live in North America, at least most authors I know about, they write in either English in Canada, we write in French as well. But then there are interests in other languages from the same topic. Translation help? Do you need to be careful? Does it lose meaning? Do you get into the cultural nuances, etc.?
It depends.
I know.
I'm currently working with an author in Bogota in Colombia, and she wrote her book in Spanish, but she does a lot of work in the US. And so, you know, having translating it into English is primary. And she could be selling both, you know, to the Latino market. And she's focusing in that marketplace. And so, yeah, I mean, if it's beneficial for your book to be in another language, absolutely. Like, you know, in Canada, you said if you're in Toronto, is that correct?
Yeah.
So we live very close to Montreal. And so that's very French. So if you've got a book, having it in English and French would be extremely valuable. So yeah, it just depends how it's going to help you.
Correct. Now, one aspect, and I see it on every book almost, right? So, and then you're going to laugh at this one. Most book covers has this saying on it. This book is for everyone. And that tells me that almost kills me every time I see that on a book. Why is that?
Well, and this is a funny thing, because when authors come to me, Robin, I ask them two questions. One is, what do you want your book to do for you? And who is it for? So already I can get a feel for where they're coming from. But the answer to who's this for is everyone. Well, mine is a universal message and everyone can benefit from it. And I'm like, brilliant. Here you are, a solopreneur, and there are companies like, you know, Procter & Gamble and Nike and Microsoft. They don't even try and sell to everyone. You know, Apple, they don't sell to everyone.
You're absolutely correct.
You know, I always love the example of Nike, for instance. You go into a Nike store and they've got all their athletics, you know, all the different sports. They've got different departments for those. And that's really how you have to think about your book as well. It's like, who is it really for? Because otherwise the marketing, if you try and appeal to everyone, you're appealing to no one.
I know, Susan, your company is, I think it's called Aviva Publishing. Am I correct? That's your company, right? So what is your business model? How do you work with either the author, the publishers, etc.? So how do you put it all together from an author perspective, if somebody's interested?
From an author perspective, there are two roads. One is that you just publish through me. You come with a finished manuscript and we publish the book. We guide you through the process. And then the second path is to work with me with marketing the book. How can we find the right market and start looking at what are the opportunities? Are you going to speak? Are you going to coach? What do you want to do with this book? Because that'll help. So it's looking at building authority and awareness, which you would do through podcasting, for instance, like we're doing here, doing writing. I mean, your book is full of articles, blog posts, you know, you name it, tips, techniques. You know, you can cut, dice, and slice your book into umpteen different ways to get the most out of it, too. And social media, going to conferences, networking. These are ways you can build authority and awareness. And then to get paid, you've got your speaking, your coaching, your training, developing products. So. And your book is the hub. It's the central point of that.
Now, when we talk about, you know, some of the authors are, I don't want to say misguided, but yeah, let's use the word misguided, I guess, on the topic. And they come to you at a publishing stage. Wouldn't that be like expired already? Shouldn't that be addressed at the idea inception?
What, publishing or marketing it? Sorry.
No. I'm talking about the topic of the book at this point, because we talked about, you know, addressing niche markets, try to solve a problem. Yeah. But sometimes they come to you with the book is already manuscripted, it's already done, written, mm-hmm. now ready for publishing. But you look at the book and you say, well, I don't know where this is going to go. I have a hard time publishing this thing because it doesn't fit what we just talked about earlier. Do you support, like, does anybody come to you and say, hey, I'm listening, I'm thinking about writing a book. Do you do any consultation on this? Can you help them out?
I've done it, you know, just to guide them in the right direction, because you're right. They may not necessarily have had that particular person or that target, that niche in mind when they wrote it. However, if the material is what's known as evergreen material, and that is that it's going to stand the test of time, then, you know, you could massage it a little bit. It's often if the material is the same, like in your case, you've got the sales strategies, but if you didn't know and you were just going to put a book out on sales, we could look at maybe some of the examples linked to the industry that you decide that you want to go to. So it might just mean changing the examples. You could have the same book and write it for different, you know, different niche markets and just change a few cosmetic changes.
Now, when it comes to publishing in your world, there are platform publishing, obviously. There's many platforms for publishing. And there's still the old-fashioned hard copy publishing, which goes on the bookshelves. How do you think these platforms have changed the way you publish things in the past, let's say, 10 years ago till today?
Well, the fact that it's so easy for people to go in and publish a book in a weekend, write it and publishing, especially with AI. You know, we were talking a little bit about AI earlier before we went on the air. And yeah, I mean, people have got the opportunity to be an author just like that. And that didn't exist, you know, before. And in fact, you know, the traditional publishers are having a harder time. They're very stuck in their ways, and they're having to look at how can they change that to fit what's going on in this world. I mean, people are still buying books. People love books. However, you've got the different formats. You've got your hard copy, you've got your soft cover copy, you've got the ebook, which, as you know, ebooks are out there big time. And then audiobooks. That's the big thing too, is to have your book in audio, because people are consuming more and more via audio. So I don't know if that answered your question.
Yeah, it does. No, it does. Like, because things have shifted, obviously. I mean, back in the days, and I'm assuming there's competing channels, because the consumer is the consumer, right? So the consumer is consuming. When they're reading a book, they're not multitasking and doing other things. So you can't read a book, perhaps you can, and listen to a podcast talking about the book, like we're doing right now. So simultaneously, you can't listen to Susan and Robin, for instance, while reading a book. You probably be reading a book and later on listen to our podcast. So podcasting has taken also on a role of almost semi-publishing books kind of thing, because, you know, each one of those podcasts is targeting a certain topic or certain demographic, etc. And these platforms now are hosting everything. So if you go on Spotify, you can listen to an audiobook, you can switch to a podcast. So there's competing channels and offering at the same time for the consumers. So that poses a little bit of almost a challenge for the publishing side, isn't it?
It is. However, think about having your book in all these different versions. So authors get very worried, you know, if I put my book out in audio, nobody's going to buy the print version. Well, that's not true, because often people buy both because they want the printed version. I know, for instance, that if I listen to a book, an audio book, then if they're talking, if it's a nonfiction book, sometimes I'm driving while I'm listening to it and I want to see it as well. So I'll purchase maybe the ebook version of it as well. So people do, they like to have the opportunity. Some people really just want to hold the book. They love the feel of a book. They're just like, there's nothing like the feel of a book. I hear that so often.
And I know we talked about it earlier. I'm assuming it's sort of like I don't know if it's one, but I think it's one recipe for marketing and helping authors get, you know, especially for those authors that they're not really known and it's their first book, etc. Susan, you mentioned earlier like few recipes like podcasts, speaking, newsletters, be part of a community. I'm supposed to go through all this, or there's a certain channels they should be focused on more than others, or is it a combination of everything?
It's a combo. I always say pick two or three and do them properly. Like if you're going to put your energy into social media, don't try and be on all the platforms. Be on where your target audience is. So if you're in the business community, obviously, you know, LinkedIn. Now Substack has come into play and is getting quite a lot of traction. Podcasting is the number one marketing tool for authors. It's a great opportunity to share your expertise. However, be on podcasts that your target audience are listening to.
Sure.
You know, otherwise you're wasting time. Just to go on a podcast for the sake of being on a podcast doesn't work. So I just wrote a whole article on this, by the way.
You did? Okay. We could reference that as well.
Being on the right podcast, yes.
That's right. We can reference that. And thank you for being on the podcast. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. I'm thrilled to be here. I'm talking about my favorite subject.
how can that go wrong, right?
Yeah.
I know we talked a little bit about this, but can we go a little bit in depth on how AI is impacting the I want to say the book business from various aspects, authoring all the way down to publishing. In your world, from your point of view, where does AI help or not help?
AI can help. First of all, a lot of people are misusing it because they're taking advantage and having AI write the book for you. I mean, that's a do-it-yourself model. But that's out there, and that's competing against all the other books. So it's putting a lot more stuff out there, which unfortunately could be garbage, but we don't know. So how it's affecting it, I think you can use AI. I think there's a point that you can use AI to help, let's say, in the editing process. If you get very verbose, sometimes authors sort of write and write and write, and you know, you put this into chat and chat will, you know, condense it to 50%, 25%, and still keep the essence of what you're saying. I'm actually doing an AI storytelling program at the moment with a wonderful lady by the name of Lisa Bloom. And she says, you know, AI, you can use AI for 80%. The 20% is you, your experiences, your emotion, your stories. AI doesn't know that. So that's your contribution. So you can work with it like that. Mm-hmm. It's a great tool. It's going to help you get something out faster, but make sure it's good stuff and obviously check facts if it comes up with stuff.
That's right. That's right. But
add your piece to it. Don't let it do all the work.
Add you know, you one of the, one of the things, Susan, that we talk about here is AI and the environment of AI that AI created in the world that we live in today. I think it created a bit of a laziness out there.
Oh, yes.
And that's my personal opinion.
Yeah.
And the reason I say that is because the consumerism that we live in, the attitude that drove us into, for instance, going to an Apple store, picking up a telephone and press a button and all of a sudden everything gets done for you. How many times, you know, when I was in the language business selling professional translation services, you know, people first thing ask me, where do I download the app? And I'm thinking, it's not an app, it's a professional translation. So somebody actually has to do the translation for you. And we live in an app world where most people want to get things done fast, press a button, get it done, off you go. I interviewed an individual from, he's a fellow New Yorker, I think. I'm not sure if you're in New York City or just
in
New York
City. But I'm up in the Adirondack Mountains.
Yeah. So Victor Varnado, I'm not sure if you've heard of him. And Victor, he's a many things, but he does many things. But one thing he talked to me about on the podcast is something called Bookifier, meaning that you can take your idea and put it in. He developed this app or this agent, an AI agent, where you can take your idea and make it turn it into a book using his application, using his agent, which tend to tie back into what you were just saying. Be involved. Yeah, use tools to get things done, make things faster, more efficient, mm-hmm. but don't lose control of what you're producing.
Absolutely.
Because at the end of the day, that's going to represent you. You know, you may misrepresent yourself in some cases.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, you know, AI can do a fabulous job, but it's not you.
100%. Yeah, it's not you.
I love this idea. I've got to check this guy out and his what he's got there.
I'll share the podcast with you after the call. But
fabulous.
It was pretty interesting. His idea. Now, in your opinion, what does success look like for an author?
That they achieve the goal that they set out for the book, and that it's strategic, that there's a plan behind it, and it's not the hoping, wishing, and praying. You're taking that out of what they should be even thinking about. That they know and they're focused on, again, the niche market and how they're going to use the book and the value that that book offers their audience.
And how do they, in your opinion, have seen this before done, where like an author converts their books into consulting, into training, into licensing? Yeah. Does that work?
Yeah, I did it.
There you go.
I mean, and I'm not the only one. I mentioned before, I'm very involved with the National Speakers Association, and many of the speakers there have books. And if they don't, they know they need to. And they're in the position that you are, that they're they either want to write a book or they're starting it. And yes, so yeah, because it's your IP and it's that credibility builder for you to be seen as a go-to expert in your field.
What's your preference from an idea? And I should have asked you this earlier, because there's a lot of ideas, and I love this topic, and I could talk about it for 2-3 hours, but we only have 1 hour. I got another one to do. You know, a lot of ideas for a book, for instance, it's got a time-sensitive topic to it. Example, if I'm going to be writing a book tomorrow about prompt engineering and a new technology comes up, eliminates prompt engineering in the next 6 months. So my bookshelf life is like really 6 months, because after that, a new technology came up and get rid of it. In your opinion, from an author perspective, they should keep that in mind as well. Like how long, what your book's going to put out there, how long is going to stay, how long would it be practiced if there's something in your book to be practiced. If you're proposing an idea, a business model, a process, would the new future that we're going to be going through now, and we're going through it today and tomorrow, et cetera, as technology shifts on all of us, would it eliminate that? And these are questions that everybody's going to be putting, because writing a book is a big, big effort.
It is. It is. And this is where they're going to churn something out quickly, because you've got to get it to market quickly. And knowing that you're going to probably have to change it every year, if not more, because it is going to be redundant in a very short period of time. My advice would be, as much as possible, is to have an evergreen component of it to give it a longer shelf life. Otherwise, as I say, you've got to be, you know, very nimble and be changing.
Come up with another idea.
Yeah. You look at the books that came out as soon as chat came out, and you've got a zillion books on chat. Oh, how to write, you know, chat prompts, how to do this, how to, you know, engineer it. And they're probably, most of them are, you know, out of date already.
Over.
It's over. It's over. Chat can write its own prompt for you. You know, you don't need a book on it.
And I proved it.
Yes. Yes. You know, I've written some, well, had chat help me with some GPTs, because I was like, yeah, this is fun.
Yeah. Now, some authors plateaus and some authors compound. You know, they get a little bit better with time. In your opinion, what separates them?
Their focus. Their focus. Why are they doing this, and who are they doing this for? You know, just for the sake of having a book. Hey, you know what? I wrote a book. So what? You know, I think we addressed that earlier.
That's right, yeah.
People are not buying books.
That's right.
Buying what that book is going to do for you.
Correct.
And so knowing that and understanding that you're going to help a certain group of people with a certain skills, the value that they need, and that's knowing your audience, you can address that.
Yeah. Now, one of the, you know, like I hear a lot of people, they talk about this stuff, because there's somebody who I know very well. We've worked together at some point, and she already wrote like 3-4 different books. And I'm just wondering, you know, I think it's more of a consulting for her. I don't know what it does, but it just feels like churning books quickly. They do it now. And I don't know, from a perspective of book selling alone, are they thinking too small at that case? Like, you just want to go in and sell books. But what you're saying is your book is a tool, and not just for book selling, could be for many other elements that you can,
absolutely,
your book can help you through.
Absolutely. And that's got to be clear from the get-go. You've got to know what it is. How are you going to use this asset?
Yeah.
And often, and this is one of the drawbacks with most publishers, actually, is that they give you a powerful tool that you do not know how to use.
Yeah.
And that's why books land up on bookshelves and die, you know, an author death, because they don't know what to do with it.
Correct. And you know what, as we come close to the time here, I want to finish off with a few, you know, what I call rapid fire questions. They're easy questions, and then we'll wrap it up. So that's your advice to the authors. One mistake authors should stop making immediately. What would that be?
Following the masses.
That's right. Be different. One leverage move most offers most authors are ignoring.
Is that the fact that their book is so powerful and can do so much for them, and they're just not using it in that way. They haven't clarified what role it plays in their business model.
And one question every nonfiction author should answer before writing even page one.
Yeah. Who's this book for?
That's right. Who's this book for? We talked a little bit about that one during the podcast. And my final question, if you don't mind, if you were advising founders or experts publishing their first serious book in 2026, what would you insist they get right before they start?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's the same thing, is knowing what they want that book to do for them, who it's for, and what they want to do for them, because those are the two big questions that they, when they say, oh, I'm going to write a book, they don't think about that, and they think it's for everyone. So it's not. It might be, but you can't sell it to everyone.
That's
and
right.
By the way, the book is just the beginning of the journey. It's not the end of the journey.
True.
As 100%. One author said to me, how long do I have to keep marketing my book? And I said, how long do you want to keep selling your book?
True. Very wise. Susan, I want to thank you so much for joining me. Any last comments, any last thoughts that you'd like to share with the audience?
I don't want to stop being repetitive, you know. I think those two questions are so major, you know, in terms of their book, and knowing that they can do so much more with it. And just love to have conversations with people about their books, because there's so much misguidance around, and I want to show them another way.
Would you be open for some of our audience to reach out to you with their book idea?
Absolutely. And I'll give you a link that they can book a call. They can actually go to bookmarketingbrainstorm.com and book a call. And we'll do, it's only nonfiction. I don't deal with fiction at all.
Absolutely.
It's only nonfiction.
So I want to thank you, Susan, for joining me.
This has been fun.
This has been fun for me as well. And for the audience, on behalf of myself and Susan Friedman, my guest of honor today, I want to thank you so much for listening in on our podcast. We're approaching close to 1,700 downloads per day now, and I owe it all to you guys. Thank you so much for listening in on the podcast. If you're coming on YouTube, I really appreciate it. And thanks for watching us. And just a reminder that every episode I publish, it has a long version, meaning the entire episode will be available to all of you. You can go and watch it either on YouTube or the podcast channels, any podcast channels. And also in conjunction with this, and plus to that, I publish close to 25 short video where we highlight moments, key moments of our conversation with our guests, specifically for the one we had today. And I also publish a blog summarizing the conversation that we've had with Susan today as well. You can find the blog on robinayoub.blog, and where you can also browse through previous episodes. Each episode gets its own blog. Instead of listening, if you don't want to, if you prefer not to listen to the, and you want to have perhaps the Cole's Note version of every podcast, head over to the blog and take a look at the summary of the conversation. On behalf of myself and Susan again, thank you so much for joining in on episode 158. I thank you so much for listening in. I'll see you at the next one.